Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
I am chef owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants and food businesses, including Rub With Love. I was using my roast rub today for my prime rib. Delicious.
Great way to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it on popcorn. It's also delicious.
Exactly. And so we have a... You know, this is a kind of vacation time for us, too, because we're all closed on Christmas Eve, except for Lola. Lola's always open because of the hotel, but... except Christmas Day. We've finagled Christmas Day to just a short little kind of sandwich thing for the room service.
That's but nice.
Outside of that, everyone else has the day off for Christmas and Christmas Eve.
Yeah, both of my restaurants are closed on the 24 at night and 25.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, what's interesting, though, is the holidays are changing. Customers really want to eat out for the holidays. The amount of phone calls we got for Thanksgiving was off the charts and has been going that way for the last 20 years. But,
yeah, but
same thing
always,
for Christmas.
There's 360 days left to make money.
No. It's not about the making money. I'm just talking about how people's dining habits have changed.
Well, people have to eat every day, but, you know, it's time for them to get in the kitchen and cook something, for crying out loud.
Apparently not. They're calling for reservations.
I would also wonder how much of that is because our city has changed over the course of the years, too.
I don't think it's got anything to do with it. I just think people, restaurants have become second homes for people. Mm-hmm. They don't cook as much, and thankfully.
It's been good.
Just saying. But, you know, so it's just an interesting how the dining, you know, everything's changed in the restaurant business, right? So it used to be when I started 30 years ago in my own place, the average diner spent 2.5 hours, over a dinner. Today, it's less than 1.5 hours. That's got nothing to do with the city changing. That's got to do with how we like to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to sell a martini or two at lunch 30 years ago. Now, none. Literally zero. Except for maybe this week of Christmas holiday where people are out yucking it up. Like I'm going to do later today.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Are you going to get out there and go shopping and do anything?
No, I have my annual Christmas boys lunch today.
Is that why you're dressed so fancy?
Yeah, I'm dressed all up.
Okay.
We're all golf buddies, and so I wore my golf outfit.
I like it.
Except for my shorts. No, I should be.
It's only 40 degrees out there.
37 at my house this morning.
Yeah.
Anyway... Welcome to the show. We have a big show for you. It's a Christmas extravaganza. We're going to dedicate it to all things Christmas. And we're making a Christmas meal with everything from appetizers to dessert. We're sharing our foodie gifts, which I got one yesterday that I ate this morning.
Did you?
I did. It was fantastic.
I did too. What was it? What was
I'm not going to tell you until our segment.
Wait.
And we're going to decide what to eat for Christmas breakfast day.
Mm.
That, you know, that morning. Because I know, you all know about, I have Strata, but I want to hear what you're going to have.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to start off with our taste of the week.
Yeah, we're reversing things up a little bit. Normally we do our ordinary to extraordinary, but we love to talk about delicious things that we've eaten throughout the week. Tom, what was your week like?
Well, I had plenty of good things. I was in California, in San Francisco, at Levi's Stadium
for the
Michael Mina tailgate. So the Seahawks game with the 49ers, they bring down a visiting team city chef to help with the tailgate at Levi's Stadium. So we brought down salmon and Dungeness crab and had a nice little crab foo young salad with grilled salmon on top.
Ooh,
which was delicious. But I'd say the favorite thing that I've eaten this week, God, there's so many.
There's so many. I know. We're never want for food. The three.
You know,
of us,
I was playing with some rose petals to make a sorbet for the New Year's Eve supper that we're doing here at the Hot Stove Society.
Yeah.
We made a pear sorbet with rose tea. So it's a savory sorbet in between courses. Kind of like yours that you always served at Rovers, right? You had the...
It was red wine.
Red wine.
Pinot Noir spice sorbet.
Yeah, spice sorbet. So I'm making a pear and rose tea sorbet, and I was working on finding some rose petals that were still fragrant, not just dry, but fragrant and dry.
Yeah.
And I found some, and so I'm excited about that.
Wow, that's fun.
Okay, what about you?
Fun.
You know, I had the opportunity to go out with a coworker for a little extended lunch the other day, and we went to the International District, Cow, which we all know I love and has been a taste before. But what was so fun was to take a friend into Uwajimaya, where we had parked, so I needed to go buy something to pay for the parking.
Uh-huh.
And
you cheapskate.
Well, why? You're going to pay for parking. You might as well buy a bunch of treats for your office. It's actually being a cheapskate.
I'm okay with that.
It's actually being quite generous.
You know, I'm on the board of Watchamaya, so I watch out for you parking scuff
laws.
Okay,
well, maybe you'd be happy to know that I spent a lot of money in snacks.
Okay, park anytime you want.
But that's the most
fun. It turns out to be the most expensive parking spot.
Oh, my gosh. It really does, because you can't but hold back from buying all the delicious, fun treats that you want to share with people that maybe have never had these treats before. So we walked up and down the aisles, and I think the favorite, there were two. One was a seaweed snack that has what is like supposed to be like fried tempura batter on the other side of it. They've got to be terrible for you, but they are so crunchy and delicious and savory. I'm going to bring you some if you haven't had
them. Yeah, it would help to have a brand name.
It's all written in Asian.
That's okay. In Asian?
In Asian.
It's all written in Asian.
Of course.
Not Chinese or Korean or Japanese.
Pretty sure Japanese. Haven't really looked all that closely.
What language was it?
I think I already told you. I don't know.
Take a picture of it and send it to
us.
We'll take
a picture.
We'll put it on our page.
I will also say the Calbee brand potato chip has a really good seaweed potato chip. That was another hot item. I will take pictures of both.
All right.
Cool.
Terry, you have less than a minute.
I went to place called Plenty of Clouds, which is where anchovy and olives used to be, on across from Adena on Capitol Hill on Pike and 13, something. I had for the first time a mala fried chicken with numbing. It's called numbing spice.
Yeah, Szechuan pepper.
Szechuan pepper.
Yeah, yeah. And it was super numbing. It was like, oh my god, it was like being at the dentist. My tongue was like have gone in the front. I was isn't that a little bit big numbing? I mean, I've never had that before, so that was the first time, and that was actually very delicious.
I hear that restaurant is great. It's
The food is really delicious. I had plenty of different dishes there, and it was really, really delicious.
Parting of the Clouds, is that what you said?
No, Plenty of Clouds.
Plenty of Clouds, all right.
And I recommend it. It's a very good, delicious Sirtek and Szechuan food, I guess.
Szechuan and Yunnan, I believe?
Yeah, both of them. And but very delicious food. I recommend it.
Well, so interesting.
There you go.
Can't wait to try it.
Yep.
All right. Appetizers and cocktails. We're going to do Christmas all day today, or holidays, whatever you happen to celebrate. It's all up to you, but we're going to talk about some different foods that work with it. On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. We're back in the Seattle kitchen at the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. One of the many places that we operate around the core of the city, one of our joints. Let's start with some appetizers and some cocktails for our holiday supper.
That's right. Maybe you have people coming over to the house. Maybe you're going somewhere and you need to bring something. It's time to talk about appetizers and cocktails. A very important part of the holiday gathering. Mm-hmm. Because you gotta get the party started. You have to have a little something to drink. Tom, what are you going to be serving at your home
on Christmas Day?
On Christmas Day,
I am serving a rib roast, and I think it might be the last year for it because I always did for years. Jackie and I did vegetable soup and homemade rolls as kind of a Christmas night. Like the party's over, we're done. You know, it's like a nice way to wrap things up. But my nephews, young male nephews, just whined and whined about not having meat for dinner. So I started doing a prime rib for them maybe 10 or years or so ago. Uh-huh. And so I think I'll finish it this year. I have a prime rib class on Saturday night and here at the Hot Stove. And I think I'll finish with mine on Christmas and then move back to vegetable soup next year.
Really? Okay, good.
But I always like to do a classic. When I'm doing meat like that, I like a classic seafood cocktail. And that's my idea of fun. So either king crab or great shrimp or dungeon crab or something like that, and just nothing fancy.
But that's great. That reminds me of just like classic steakhouse goodness right there. And there's almost no other context in which you would see those on a menu oftentimes, is except for at those big steakhouses.
Yeah, because they're expensive, right?
They're expensive.
You know, they're the things that make the steak look cheap. You know, a $30 crab cocktail makes this $80 steak seem cheap.
I should definitely get that Dungeness crab cocktail. It's only $30.
It's only $30.
Right.
So, and so I like to either cut the shell in a way that it's very easy as a cocktail. I don't want people coming to a fancy dinner at my house and standing around the chatting and then trying to wrestle the shell off of the crab. Or so I like to either do just shell it completely or at least put it on the half shell. Cut the crab leg in half and then put the meat back into the shell.
Dungeness or,
king or dungeness? I love the Alaska king.
Yeah, the king is good.
Those big Maris legs, you know, the legs are about a pound and a quarter a piece.
Make a nice little aioli with that.
Nothing tells your friends you love them more than giving them big chunks of boneless crab. Shellless crab.
I would 100% agree. Earlier this year, one of the nice memories we had was having all those lovely fishermen from Alaska into the show. And when they brought those big Alaskan king crab legs, my oh my, they were really buttery and delicious.
And then they shucked them for us.
I know. Like, it's very loving. Now, what would you serve as a beverage with that delightful seafood appetizer? What would you serve?
I think it's a good time to, you know, finish up with your cocktails. Mm-hmm. So I like a classic martini, as you know.
I
like Jackie. My wife likes a Manhattan, but that's a good time when you're doing the cocktail because you. In our world, you tend to have the classic red cocktail sauce, and it's got a little sweet and tart, and doesn't necessarily go with wine very well. Overwhelms champagne, but a sparkling wine or a classic cocktail.
I love
champagne all the way.
The idea of bringing martinis into my parents' household. They were not much drinkers when we were growing up as kids, but if they were having a wild night, they would have a gin martini, and I feel like maybe this year is the time to bring it back into the Okamura household.
There you go.
All right, Terry Rotaro, what is your appetizer situation on Christmas?
Probably
Christmas
a little
Eve?
Bit of charcuterie, you know, nice little charcuterie board, and there's many ways to embellish that. You can, you know, you can put some little tartare of beef added to your charcuterie. You can do a little pâté. You know, this is a time where you want to be chef out there, need to get in the kitchen and make a little pâté. That's a good time of the year to start on that kind of...
Now, that seems like a mildly intimidating item for people
to
make.
I said for the wannabe chef. You know, you talk about it, you got to get to it now.
Let's be straight. It's meatloaf.
If my wife would say
meatloaf.
It's dog food.
But no. You still give it to her anyway.
No, I don't give it to her. She won't eat it.
Oh. So what makes up a beautiful charcuterie board? Because sometimes I think that it is great to do some of the work, as you're mentioning, right? You can make a beautiful pâté or you can make a galantine or something of that nature. But it's also a really easy way if you're making a larger dinner to utilize the grocery store.
Of course.
Of course.
So finding some good pickling, I mean, or either make it or find it.
Mm-hmm.
Some good homemade pickling is usually a good idea to get combination with charcuterie.
Mm-hmm.
Charcuterie is pretty fatty, pretty rich. You know, it's not something you eat every day, awfully.
And I think a lot of people think cornichon. Do you have a favorite brand of cornichon?
A brand?
Mai
is probably my only go-to over the shelf.
Both mustard and cornichon.
Mustard and cornichon, yes. And then both of those items are extremely necessary in terms of cutting through the richness of that dish. So that, and you can. This is perfect time of the year to learn how to make pickles. You know, I mean, pickling your vegetable is a good idea.
Yeah.
And then the meat. The meat is very important. You know, find some good ham, some good prosciutto, maybe some jambon Bayonne, which is Bayonne ham, same idea as prosciutto, but now available on the market. You go to a place like, I would go to De Laurentiis, for example, and get a nice assortment of sliced cured meat, you know, and put that on your board. And along with that, get creative. Make either a little tureen of something of pâté and or... make a little tartare. You know, this is a time where you can start playing with those little different items. Make it the day of and then put it on your cheese board, on your charcuterie board. And then next to it, most people like cheese. I'm a big fan of my cheese after dinner. I still haven't got to the idea of eating too much cheese before dinner.
Oh, you've been in the U.S. for so long. We love eating cheese before we have a big meal.
It's not how long I've been here. It's just a matter of preference.
Yeah, it's a preferential thing. But, you know, the cheese plate is a big go-to for a lot of people because, yet again, especially now with the Murray's Counter at QFCs, which are pretty much everywhere, and a lot of places in the city, you can find a beautiful cheese counter.
Absolutely.
Get some soft cheeses, get some aged hard cheeses. pick out your dried fruits and your nuts, and it makes for very impressive and delightful spread.
One-stop shopping for that would be De Laurentiis.
If you go to
the market and, you know, you go there with your checkbook and you just pick everything for Christmas.
It is very easy to go overboard at De Laurentiis.
They have much choices that you're going to be, your head's going to be spinning.
Yes.
Yeah, you really need to be thinking about January too, because you're going to be eating it all in January, because you're never going to get to it at Christmas.
Your tins of sardines and all your pickled items.
So in that term, creamy cheese by smaller, dry cheese or soft pot of cheese by a little bit bigger, because they will last longer.
Mm-hmm.
So those are good instructions for how you buy your cheese. You know, if it's a creamy, tender cheese, don't buy too big of a portion, because you're going to have to eat it fairly fast. But if you're eating Agour, sheep cheese, or, even older cow cheese, you just buy a little bit bigger, so you are eating it in January.
Mm.
When times are lean, you come home, just one little slice of cheese, baguette, and we're down.
Living that French lifestyle in 2019.
That's how you stay so skinny.
Not even true.
All right, we're going to finish our appetizers. We're going to move on to the meal itself. It's a main course for everyone on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen.
Yay.
We're here at the Hot Stove Society in downtown Seattle. I'm with Chefs Tom Douglas and Thierry Rocher. I'm Katie O. And we are talking about the main course, the main big deal.
Can I just say one thing first?
Of course.
It seems that maybe some of our audience might have been pre-functioning today.
I have seen little bottles of something being passed
around. Just saying. Chef, do you have any thoughts
on this? I have the same impression, too.
You have the same impression?
I feel it in the air.
It's either sugar or booze. I'm not sure what's got them going. But
it might be a combination of both, actually. if they're doing it right, they're doing both.
There you go.
Let's talk about the main course of the meal, Christmas. It's a big deal for some families.
Or any holiday,
we're coming up on the Christmas holiday, so if you're the type to celebrate Christmas, you're thinking about it. Maybe you've already purchased a big hunk of meat to stick in the oven, but maybe you're kind of last minute rushing around to get some presents, and you're still pondering what you're going to have for dinner. And luckily
and
for
by
you,
the way, pizza's
chefs,
not going to do it.
Although pizza is awfully delicious.
Not that night.
But yes, it is a night when you feel like maybe you want to get a little bit more, if nothing else, cozy.
Okay.
And sometimes for some, a little posh. But what I think is important is those smells, you know, the smells of the kitchen that make it an inviting, warm, and welcoming place. Tom, you teased out a little bit in the last segment you'll be doing a
prime?
Mm-hmm.
Prime.
I was going to say, for you, I really imagine the prime being a
big part of that. It's also just one of those misnomers out there, right? So if you're not doing a prime grade rib roast, you're not having prime rib. Right, you're having rib roast, it's misstated on so many menus, and it is not, in my opinion, okay. You know, you should say you're having a rib roast.
Be honest.
At home, tell your friends whatever the hell you want.
But
on a menu, you should be telling the truth.
I honestly believe it's an honest mistake in some people. They just don't know.
Yeah,
they don't know the difference.
It's a little bit like beet risotto, right? Or celery root risotto, where you're doing a risotto style, but it's not really, there's no rice in it, right? So not to get off on that. But not to get off too far,
tell us a little bit more. So you have some nephews that feel like, it is not a holiday dinner unless I have a big hunk of meat. And I think actually a lot of people maybe have that sentiment as well.
Well, they often came to our house as we were growing up as kids. And my dad, their granddad, loved prime rib. That was his favorite meal of the year. And with eight kids, we didn't have it very often. His idea of going to heaven would be going to an all-you-can-eat buffet in Las Vegas with prime rib on the menu.
Man, and my parents both.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, I get it.
And just keep rotating.
Just keep going through the line. Yep, exactly. So the kids got used to that for a special day. And so to get vegetable soup and homemade rolls was not their idea of a specialness. So I am doing a rib roast that is prime.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really want a home version of this, instead of trying to glean from us little bits and pieces, our friend of the show, Kenji Lopez Alt, has a video on Serious Eats. It's a terrific website. It's gotten a little commercial. They do a lot of ads now where they didn't used to do, but they still have the same great information behind those. And he put a video out and a little chat about how to, you know, he went through all the combinations of rib roast and how the wives' tales of cooking it, like he likes to do, right?
I love Kenji for this reason. Yeah. He really exhaustively researches and cooks recipes as we know them through wives' tales sometimes and really sifts through and finds out what's the real truth.
So he did a nice video on this. He shows pictures of the right way and the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed watching, and I think it's a great 10 minutes to spend. If you're investing, like I did yesterday, $500 for a four-star. Well, this is for my class on Saturday. But I have Choice, I have Prime, and then I got the Wagyu, the Mishima Reserve Wagyu.
Wow.
It was four to five hours. I got it for $500. It was well more than that retail. But if you're going to invest that kind of money, I think a 10-minute video on how not to screw it up is really, really a good idea.
Treat yourself to the 10 minutes.
With that kind of investment, you need to watch at least two videos.
But even a Choice rib roast is $150, you know, for a 15-pound rib roast. Yeah. Or Prime is $250. Right. So I think it's well worth the investment of time. But the idea is to what you want to end up with, I'll say, is a nice gradient of color all the way through. You don't want a gray outside that's overcooked and a red center that's undercooked. Mm-hmm. You want that beautiful pink from the charred crust edge all the way through the center of the roast and somewhat at the same level, right? If you want medium rare, you don't just want the center medium rare. You want the whole eye, if not more, medium rare. So figure out your oven. His favorite technique at the end of the day, if I'm going to give the end of the show.
Oh, spoiler alert.
His favorite was to cook it low and slow until you get to that spot where you want, and then turn on the high heat and finish with the caramelizing of the crust. Mm. Because then it doesn't have time. If you start with the caramelizing, you might get too gray before you get to the center.
Right.
Now it's pink all the way through, and all you're doing is crusting the outside. It doesn't have the high heat doesn't have time to penetrate and make the outside overdone. Mm. So that's, at the end of the day, the tale of the story.
This is really making me want a big, rosy, blushing piece of prime rib.
And then I would also say fresh horseradish. It's super fun. You just peel
so
it off.
So delicious,
Send it around the table with the grater and just have people just grate fresh horseradish over top of their meat. It looks like snow. It's very festive and wintry.
I would also say it's the thing, like we were talking about the charcuterie board in the last segment, which is it brings a little bit of brightness to an otherwise very rich piece of meat,
sides to that should definitely be,
sides are the next segment. We're on the entree now.
Okay.
Terry, what are you doing?
What are you
going to
do for your entree?
I'm
going to
do a duck.
You're doing duck?
Yes. I'm going to do a whole roasted duck. And I don't do this very often, but I do it once a year. And finish with, my concentration is obviously on the sauce. Mm-hmm. I love making sauces. A big duck that's cooked, by the way, all the way. It's not medium rare. I mean, I don't believe in that.
I'm with you on that, buddy.
It's got to be cooked all the way. And, you know, and you don't buy a moulard duck to do a well-done duck. You buy a nice picking duck, you know, much thinner on the skin. Mm-hmm. Just like you find in the ID, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of duck, you know, thin.
Chinese barbecue.
It's pekin. Exactly. P-E-K-I-N. A pekin duck.
Pekin duck, yeah.
Yeah.
And you buy those ducks, and they're not very expensive. You roast two of them because one is never enough.
But how do you prepare your duck? I think duck feels unlike a chicken or the turkey that sometimes we all make once a year. Sometimes people will never touch a duck.
Well, the only difference between a duck and a chicken is the duck's going to render a lot more fat. That's usually the rules of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is start by making the oven hot, and you want to render that fat. And you want to put a pan underneath. For sure, you want to have a dripping pan underneath your duck. So you season your duck. I put a little citrus and rosemary inside the cavity, not packed, just inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put both of those ducks in the oven at 425 degrees. And I wait till this thing, it doesn't take very long. It takes about 30 minutes to have most of the fat render. So then you pull your pan out,
mm-hmm.
you gently lift your duck, and you're going to have most of the fat coming down into that dripping pan you have underneath. and then you put it back in the oven at 325 to 350 degrees and finish to cook it. And it is important that you cook your duck all the way. Your meat cannot be medium rare. I mean, I personally don't agree with people who roast a duck to medium rare because
it's... Be clear, though, Chef. The duck breast separate is different.
Correct, correct. This is a whole duck. We're talking whole duck on the bone, the entire duck. And at the end, when you pull the meat out, it should be easy to pull it out and then do a lot of nice little garnish that goes with a roasting picking duck. Now, what I do at home is I do a hot... I have a orange confit that I make, which is basically sliced orange cooked very slowly in a syrup with a little vinegar. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like sweet and sour. And I brush that over the duck about... 5 minutes before it comes out. So it creates
beautiful.
A little crust
glazed
of like sweet and sour
and caramelized.
Right on top of the duck. You know, that the skin stays crispy because it's already very crisp. But it also creates that nice little flavor of sweet and sour orange and vinegar kind of idea. Very simple. And then you serve that with a bunch of vegetables. And it's kind of like the Asian Christmas, right?
Yes.
Roasted chicken. Well, with,
I was wondering how close this duck, approximates to duck à l'orange, which
is exactly the same.
Is it the same?
Yeah. And then usually, you know, pomme soufflé, which is like what we do at Luc or whatever, you put that as a garnish all around the duck.
Delicious.
And serve that for Christmas Eve, put that on the table, and everybody goes, wow.
And it of course. Both of these items that you were talking about have that show-stopping quality when you set it at the table or on the counter where you're carving. You can't help but get excited.
It's festive. It's that time of the year.
Mm-hmm. I would say sometimes, though, with duck especially, you're better off presenting at the table the whole and then taking it back to the kitchen and slicing there because there's lots of fat pockets you want to trim out. There's all sorts of things you'd like to get finished that isn't pretty at the table.
You don't have to Norman Rockwell
it at
the
table.
All
I can remember is when I was a child, when my mom would do a duck, she'd take the scissors, which I never do that. I use my knife, but she used to take the scissors and cut through the duck. And I was like, I have this memory of that big pair of scissors going through the duck
at the table.
Just crunching through.
So much for it was quack. Sides coming up next for these fabulous entrees on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back in the kitchen at the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. And we've been building our Christmas dinner throughout the show so far, our holiday dinner. And so far, we've got some seafood cocktail appetizers.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some duck and prime rib for the entree.
Some charcuterie. We've had some cocktails.
Definitely a martini and a Manhattan.
It's hard to imagine at this point having any more room for more food. But, you know, you can always find a little hollow leg or something.
We're just getting started.
No, we're just getting started here.
Professional eaters.
And, you know, when you do prime rib, say, at Christmas, it's not the time where you're going to Daniel's Broiler or the Met Grill or the Butcher's Table and you're getting a slab of prime rib, right? You're getting a little bit of prime rib.
Right.
Because you've got a lot of things to go with it. It's not slab time.
You really have to schedule out and like really monitor your intake so that you can enjoy all of the dishes.
Yeah. So when you're going to those big steakhouses, sometimes you don't order anything but the big steak, right? Mm. So this is nice little, not shaved, but certainly not inch or 2 inch thick slab time.
All right,
Tom, sides.
What are you going to do for your sides with this beautiful prime rib roast?
Well, years ago, Jackie, my wife, bought one of those Yorkshire pudding. They're not cupcake.
Like tins.
Tins, I guess. And they're kind of on wires, and there's six black iron cups. And I popped that into a 500-degree oven and with beef tallow. So just some drippings either from the roasted prime rib or some beef tallow, beef fat. I guess duck fat would work fine, too. And then once that is burning hot, I have my batter all ready to go, and I have it in the pitcher. I just pull the tray out from the oven, and I pour my Yorkshire pudding into those burning hot molds.
Mm.
Just got to say.
What do you got to say?
It's worth the effort.
It's worth the effort.
And it's not that much effort doing it that way. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more effort than, say, making a mashed potato or something of the sort. Or maybe you do both.
There's an element of danger, I think, that people feel with or hot maybe it's, beef fat just simmering away in their oven.
Maybe it's more effort than, say, a baked potato.
Yes.
Yes, right?
Sure.
But,
yeah.
But it doesn't really take the place of a baked potato unless you're a carb nut and you don't want both.
Mm, I definitely want both. Let's talk about the Yorkshire pudding batter. What if you've never tackled that particular batter before, what makes it it?
Well, it's a steam batter, right? So basically that's why it gets hollow in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
puffs up and there's no inside generally. And it's just like a gooey, doughy batter. But if you get that hot pan going, then you end up with a crust on the outside of your pudding. That is important.
That's what makes it great.
It's the texture, yeah.
Yeah, that is great.
So that would be my start of a side.
I think I'm going to go to my, fall to gratin, which we always do when there is any kind of special dinner, because we have predicted we're going to do a dinner, we have the time, and we plan to do it. So my layered vegetable, celery root, potatoes, parsnips, I try to do root vegetable gratin, and that usually works really well. I reduce some cream on the side with a little bit of nutmeg, grated nutmeg, salt, pepper, and fresh thyme. Chopped in there, and then put that in between the layers as I'm laying down in my Pyrex pan. I'm laying down all my vegetable and build it up as high as possible, and then put it in the oven with a little grated Comté on top or a little agour, one of those sheep cheese, grated right on top, and then put that in the oven. And the good thing about a gratin, it's all in the mise en place. You prep, you slice, you dice, and then once it's in the oven, it's basically you go watch your favorite movie and make yourself a cocktail.
So classic. So rich and creamy. And, I think it's one of those times when, even though sometimes we get a lot of emails about, I begrudge this time of year, the winter year is so cold, I'm so sick of this food. But, man, can you ever really get sick of a gratin?
But there are different types of gratin where you do, like, gratin lyonnais, for example, potato lyonnais. Well, you do layered onions and layered potatoes with a little chicken stock or vegetable stock if you don't want to eat chicken stock. And then you cook that in the oven with grated cheese on top, and it's a much lighter version. You don't have the cream, you don't have any of that stuff. So you just, work it around it. But most importantly, take the time to do it. It's not something you can whip up coming out of work at 6:30. You come home, you don't have time to make a gratin most weeknight. But this is a time of the year where you try and you just play a little bit around. Maybe put some carrots sliced in there so you can decorate it kind of nicely. So when you cut through, you get those layers of white, red.
Beautiful.
And maybe some layers, some spinach as well, so that you can put them in there and they're going to be...
Well, let's leave the spinach out because I'm going to make a green vegetable.
I was going to say, we've gone very carb and protein heavy at this meal so far.
Well, we eat vegetable all year round.
Oh, well, prove it to me and eat it at this holiday meal.
Well, I eat vegetables with every meal, so yes. I will say that. I was brought up that way and I love it, and it's important to me that... that I have something going that way. But I think when you add a gratin or a mashed potato or a Yorkshire pudding, depending on how crunchy it is, you want the texture of a good green vegetable.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, to me, now is not the time to do cream spinach, which you see at steakhouses all the time, right? Because they're fatty and it's heavy. And I want a bright vegetable. So either just steam broccoli, or something delicious like that with a little olive oil, salt and pepper, or roasted Brussels sprout, but not too roasted. I don't want it to be disintegrate in my mouth, right? But some crunchy kale would be fun. Mm-hmm. So that to me is the ultimate combination when you have the meat, the protein, and the green vegetable.
Yeah.
And then a nice little custardy side like the gratin.
Yeah. I don't think we ever make a meal without having a salad. Always as a side after your entree, like very French style, I guess.
Which is funny, because when you travel in Paris and stuff, it's often hard to get a salad anywhere.
Yeah. But it's in my house, I mean, always when I was a kid,
we
always had a salad.
The culture that I find in France when I've traveled is that the home cooking is much more balanced than the cooking that you find
out
in the restaurants.
The explanation of that, people go to France and they go to a 3-star restaurant or 2-star, whatever, and then they go
Caesar salad.
And then they go, I didn't have a single vegetable and I had 8-course meal. And I go, you know why? Because French people eat vegetable every single day. They grow their own vegetable. They eat vegetable every day. When they get to a three-star restaurant, they're like, hey, if I'm going to spend the bucks, I want the lobster, the foie gras, the caviar, the truffle. I don't want to eat no cabbage.
I had salad yesterday.
All year round.
I had salad the day
and
before
that. That's the explanation behind the unrational idea of a traveler, because here we eat what we want all the time, and we're used to that, right? But when you go to, you know, people who go to a restaurant once a year, they go, I'm not eating the cabbage, I'm eating all year round. I'm eating lobster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the basic idea behind the restaurant itself. Now, French people do eat a lot of vegetable. You see them on the market everywhere.
I think.
Same as here.
That is true. You do see them in the market everywhere.
Yeah.
The ones I find the funniest in the marketplace are the... You're going down, and there's fresh carrots, there's fresh cauliflower, there's parsnips, right down the... And all of a sudden, you come to a big pile of roasted, peeled beets.
Oh, yeah.
I find that that's such it's an very, odd thing.
They sell them in cryovac bag.
Not even sometimes.
Oh, yeah, sometimes just by itself, yeah.
It's just the funniest little thing. Like, you don't
well, because
get
a, it because takes... People love beets, but it takes a long time to roast those beets. So if someone else does it for you...
Yeah, and they're kind of messy. Yeah. I think that's what it is, too. It's like, you know, you have delicate French fingers. You don't want to stain them all red.
I just think that's the funniest thing.
I assume. I don't know. I mean, I can't figure...
It's not that.
It doesn't take any longer to roast a beet than a potato.
The bottom line is if you come home after work, you don't want to spend 2 hours roasting beets. You come home, you get those beets ready in the fridge. You just take them out, slice them, and make a nice salad.
And you're just desperate for
beets. I just think it's hilarious. You'll spend the time roasting a parsnip or a celery root, but you'll...
Well, I don't buy them roasted already.
Oh, yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You are French, you do.
I do, okay. I guess I do.
All right. Some last-minute gifts. Like, wouldn't you like when somebody came to your house for a party if they brought you a pre-roasted peeled beet? So last-minute gifts for your holiday special dinners on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. The audience is just waiting for our gift shop to open in 1 hour.
They're waiting for the gift shop to open so they can Christmas shop.
I know, made them stop clapping.
They're like, who? Us now?
We still have an hour to go. You know, we're here for 2 hours every week, so we love it when you listen in for the 2 hours or go get us on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
A little pop-up.
On your podcast. That's right.
I just want to remind folks, I talked about the pop over pan mm-hmm. for the...
Yorkshire pudding.
That's what I was trying to get to. And we're going to put a picture of one on our Facebook page because they are a little unique. I only use it once a year. I don't know why, but... It's an indulgence, I'll say. Would never make Katie O's kitchen.
No,
there's not room.
Not, mm-hmm. not ever going to make my kitchen. But it is also funny for you because you love a multi-use tool, and there I can only think of Yorkshire.
Well, you could
for
do
that.
Muffins in there. You could do
cornbread in there.
You could do so many things.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Oui.
I would agree, and you'd use the same technique, basically, in my mind. If you're doing cornbread in this popover pan, you simply put the bacon fat in the cup, put it in the oven, get it all hot, so that when you pour your corn batter in there, it has a head start on getting brown.
Yeah, yum.
Yeah.
Delicious.
All right. Last minute gifts.
Someone out there is shopping.
I was shopping this last weekend when I was in San Francisco. I went down to the Ferry Terminal Market,
mm-hmm.
and June Taylor was there, literally. Do you know June Taylor?
I don't know who that is.
Legend in the preserve room in the world. She's English, and she has a preserve business.
Line of product.
She makes started out with just jams.
Mm-hmm.
Now she makes all sorts of things. But I bought two of her fruitcakes.
I love fruitcake. Tom, I'm so excited for you.
I'm just saying, they were $65 a piece.
Wow, those are some really delicious fruit
cakes. Those are very special fruit.
You know why I don't know if they're delicious yet or not? Because Pinto Frijole visited from the farm this week.
Oh, no.
Pinto Frijole.
And got into my suitcase and ate one of the $65 fruit cakes.
Pinto Frijole, everyone should know, is your beautiful...
My wife's dog.
Yeah, okay, not even your wife's
dog.
No,
it's not his dog anymore. It's my wife's dog.
German short-haired pointer, and that's my figuring is how he likes fruitcake, because the Germans, the Italians, the French, they all like that little fruit in their cake. Just saying. If that was an American collie, he would never have touched it.
Like, oh, I had fruitcake. It was horrible. Yeah.
You got the wrong dog.
Oh, boy. I bet he really loved that fruitcake, though, when he sniffed it out.
At least this time. You know, the last time he got into Christmas goods, we had a pot of eggnog in the back of the car that we ran into the grocery store for just a second on the way home. He came out, and his head was buried in the eggnog. And we spent the night at the hospital getting him pumped out and all the things to come with a drunk dog, like splayed out. And the doctor just reamed my wife. She was, how could you let this happen? And it's like, you know, what do you say?
My husband's
I thought one glass would be fine.
Okay, so there's something to bring. Fruit bread.
Fruitcake.
Okay, go ahead. Your turn.
Oh, I'm a big, you know what I give for Christmas gift. I like to make my jam. I like to make, this year I'm going to make an olive almond cake that I'm going to give away. Pieces of, I'm not giving the whole cake. I'm giving pieces of the cake because one cake is too much. But no gluten-free, dairy-free. I love that cake, and I think it's a great gift. And I think making your gift is very important, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go buy, like, you know, 30.
But we're at pretty last minute now. So
exactly.
What's a,
so baking
fairly...
is like, it's so easy. Baking cookies or baking anything. I mean, it's an easy way to get around. Instead of having to go to the mall and spend a whole day having a nervous breakdown, you just make your own thing. You just bake something.
Okay, Terry, I got a better choice for you. So you don't have to go home and bake. Just go to your local Bartels and buy a 3-pack of my lovely mustards.
You know,
on sale for $14.99.
Ooh.
Look at that, huh?
That's gift.
Yep, there's
got
a gift.
That Tom Douglas signature of approval, right?
You can even do it like you leave your house to go to your friend's house for dinner. There's a Bartels on the way. There's no doubt about
it. And you know what's cool is you actually have 3 gifts in there, not just one.
I would say, though, that Bartels, a little hot plug for Bartels. I'm not getting paid by them in any way, shape, or form. But they really do a nice job of sourcing fun stocking stuffer gifts.
Yeah, and local stuff.
And that's what I mean. And they're local. They're generally got a local bent or they're from a local producer. You know, for a little last-minute gift, I'm going to go ahead and say it again. Going to a fun grocery store that you love and picking out some of the items from the past year that really got you excited and giving that as a gift is great. I mean, I don't want to bring up our beloved Chili Crisp anymore.
Oh, yes, you do.
But
I do.
I think everyone would be happy to have that in their stocking, along with some other, you know, we've talked about this again, Uwajimaya, kind of a big store, kind of wildly, you know, and if you don't go there very often, it's hard to know which kind of condiment to pick out.
And
but
it's I think it's also the time of the year to go into your neighborhood, like Madison Valley, and there's tons of little boutique shops that really specialize in little one or two things that you don't normally see everywhere. You know, and they get those products from Europe or Asia, whatever they get it from. And they have those little products that it's a good idea. You just walk in there. It supplies this individual, and I think it's a good thing to do.
I would agree. Just start asking around, even in the Capitol Hill neighborhood where I live and work, and I feel like I know the neighborhood so well. Someone told me the other day that this little tiny shop called Sugar Pill has really amazing vinegars. I had no idea that
Sugar Pill makes vinegar?
Yeah, they have vinegars in there, some interesting flavored vinegars.
I'm a big fan of vinegars. I'll be checking it out.
So maybe we should take a little shopping trip together,
Terry. There we go.
Nice.
Do you think it's okay to buy things that you like? I think you have to be careful on spice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like some people would think that Chili Crisp would be too hot, although it's not particularly hot. But is it okay to, like, force your own taste on people? Or do you think about what they like and then buy something that you think would fit into their...
Yes.
Which one?
Number two. I mean, you know who you're buying a gift to. I mean, if I'm buying a gift for you, I'm not going to worry about what I'm buying in terms of the food section, because I know you're gonna definitely try it. You might not like it, but you're going to try it, which is how you and I probably operate.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, you know, if they, you know, they're a little bit more picky, you try to bring them a little bridge to their life. You know, just buy them something that can satisfy them, but...
I think it's interesting. Do you take somebody down a different, like out of their zone, or do you only live in their zone?
So both.
It's an interesting question.
You do both. Be generous.
Here's
both.
One that I think you'll like, and here's one that I know I love.
Yeah, there you go.
Up next, we're going to finish off Christmas dinner with something sweet and delicious on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, it's time for a sweet treat for all in the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. We're here at the hot stove. We still got a bunch of work to do today. We're going to talk dessert for our holiday dinner. We're going to talk breakfast. What do you make for Christmas breakfast?
Oh, I love Christmas breakfast.
Some good cup of coffee.
Yeah. And of course, our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge is coming up, which is an exciting time for us to be able to give away some holiday cheer. The question is, who's going to be giving it away?
I just realized the other day as I was at work, I was filling out quite a few gift cards. I've lost quite a few times lately. So.
I like it.
Yeah, me too. Fun to spread the cheer.
Fun to spread the cheer. Today's going to be different, though. Whatever we give away, we're going to pick an audience member to go along with a listener from out there in the other world, in the terrestrial world.
Fun.
And then we're going to pick a third. So we're each going to give away something today.
Exciting. I like it.
It's very exciting.
It's the season of generosity.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I have your Christmas presents. I'm picking them up today. So whenever you want to find out what that is and where you want it,
where do we fly? Where do we fly to get
it? Is it the
Tom?
Puppy that I've always dreamt of?
It is.
Finally,
where do we fly it is. I have them all butchered and ready to go for Christmas dinner.
Ready to pop in the oven.
Ready to pop in the oven.
Yeah.
Popping fresh.
Oh, classic Tom joke.
That's a big rotisserie.
That's a Scroogey Christmas joke
that
right
is.
There.
My goodness. Let's talk something a little bit nicer, yes. A little bit sweeter, and that is the dessert. We've gone through appetizers and cocktails and eaten a very delicious, sumptuous meal, and maybe we've taken a little break by the fireside, letting our stomachs settle, but we're getting excited for the sweets, which is so much a part of the winter season, the holiday season.
Well, not me. I didn't take a break. I don't take breaks.
Well, okay. While
you guys were listening to commercials on the radio, I was having a delicious salad, and then I ate a cheese board, which of my favorite cheeses, including stinky cheeses like Mont d'Or. Or
Stilton,
a quas.
A good Stilton?
No, I had the quas and Montour. I like those wine rind wash rind cheeses.
You know what? This is a good time of year to go get an quas.
I'm
that
just saying.
Nice.
I don't take breaks. I was by the fire, but I was eating away while you guys were all just dinking around.
Just twiddling
okay,
our thumbs.
Okay, so now we all can right. have our sweet.
I just love it. Tom just did that. Sweet, I would make, for me, I'm going to make a souffle or a charlotte. Both of those desserts are very celebratory. It's not something you're going to take as an endeavor on a daily basis. The charlotte is a traditional French dish that's basically lady fingers on the outside of the mold. You've seen those molds that are kind of wavy, deep. You take the lady finger and you stuck them on the outside. And on the inside, it's usually a puree with a Bavarian cream. With gelatin, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's holding. So it's actually something you can make ahead of time, which is very important when you have a lot of people at your house, not to do things like the next one I'm going to talk about is souffle. That's a little bit more, you're going for the gusto for that one, because you can really mess that up.
And it's hard to make too far ahead.
You can't make souffle ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are two different things. But the charlotte, to finish the story, is the reason I like that charlotte. I used to make that for many years. Is a roasted chestnut charlotte and a chocolate sauce. Nothing light in that dish.
No.
It's a very nice, rich dish, but you don't make big slices of charlotte. You just, you know, and then a little dollop of whipped cream on top of that. So roasted chestnut puree, you make a creme anglaise base with a little gelatin, mix the two together, amaretto in there, because that's a nice little flavor to add. And then you put that into that mold of lady finger on the outside. Once it's refrigerated, it becomes solids. Then you cut slices of that, just like you would a pie. And then you put a little dollop of whipped cream and a nice little chocolate sauce that you've liquefied with a little bit of cognac.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's Christmas, you can do all that. It's authorized to do that. So cream and cognac. So you put the cognac in the cream, and then you put that into the chocolate. and it liquefies your whole chocolate and makes that a nice little sauce around your charlotte. So that's one. Yeah. Then the other one is, of course, the traditional Grand Marnier soufflé, which is, just look it up. It's a really nice dish to make.
Just look it up, I mean, he says.
You know, it's a story of making paste. You start with pastry cream. You mix egg white, meringue. And in your pastry cream, you put a lot of Grand Marnier. Lots. Don't be shy. So you have nice orange flavor. Mm-hmm. And then serve an orange anglaise around the soufflé or in the soufflé. When the soufflé is rising, it comes out of the oven. You take a spoon when you bring it to the table. You put your spoon in the middle and put your Grand Marnier anglaise into the soufflé. So it's very orangey of a soufflé.
So what is the trick, chef, that you see all the time now, and I can't remember it, that helps them not fall before they get to the table? Is it just adding more flour, or is there a starch that you add
to
give them a little bit more sturdiness?
The flour will be the one that will help it rise
a little bit
and
more.
Stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit more flour. But also, you don't need to put a lot of eggs in there, as in egg yolks. Because when you make your pastry cream, I use pastry cream as a base because that's a traditional way of doing a souffle. The thing is, it doesn't stay up for very, very long. So if you want your souffle to stay up long, get rid of the egg yolks. Mm-hmm. And just use, for example, if you're making a chocolate souffle, there's a recipe actually somewhere on the web that you can find where you can put your souffle in the microwave. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but this French guy did that.
It's okay.
No. It's not okay. It just happened to be French.
I see how
French.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so the secret is to try to keep your souffle. What you want is when your souffle comes out of the oven, you don't have time to go mingle and read the newspaper. This is where you have to be on top of your game. Make sure you're ready to go. Powdered sugar. Step to the table. Put it in front of everybody gently. And then put that sauce into it. Or leave the sauce on the table and have people do their own sauce. Show them how. And that's how you save the day.
Okay.
But a good souffle is a nice little, it's a Christmas dish kind of idea because you're not going to be making that every day. But it's worth taking the time to do it.
Tom?
I think Chef has left me a minute to talk about my dessert.
You've got two.
I mean,
exactly.
You know, when you're buying it, you don't have to.
Zing!
Terry, that was an awesome shot. I love that one. Now, for all you people who think I'm mean to Terry, just I want you to replay that over and over and over again.
It doesn't take you very long.
You have a whole bakery behind you.
Ballard Market and pick something up really quick.
Hello, chef. Can I get my taco?
I think it's time. The fruit of the season, you know, we talked earlier that it's okay this time of year, in my opinion, to get off our high horse and use tropical fruits. But the local fruit of the season is apple or pear at this point, or persimmon. So I love a good steam pudding, like a persimmon pudding. I love a little pear tart, so, you know, something a little bit lighter. We've had prime rib. We've had duck and potatoes and gratin and crab cocktails.
Make me
and
a fruit salad.
Salad and stinky cheese. And so I think a little fruit tart is a nice way to finish this up. With a little frangipane, so it's a crust, a little frangipane, the sliced fruit on top, and some people like to glaze it with a little bit of apricot jam or something to give it a little gloss at the finish. But that, to me, is the way I want to finish Christmas out. Unlike, say, Thanksgiving, where you have pie after pie after pie, and you just feel numb afterwards. I want to be fresh. I want to be ready to be done with the holidays and look forward to the new year by the end of Christmas dinner.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Nice,
wow.
Delicious sweets.
We've had a wonderful meal.
And we didn't even have to cook it at Katie's house.
I know. Not this time.
All right. We forgot, though, Christmas Day has to start with breakfast. So when we come back, we're going to go back in time and get the day started off properly.
All right.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, we're in the kitchen. It's time for breakfast here on our special holiday show. Chef in the Chapeau, Tom Douglas, KDO, and our new producer, Sarah, is here. Tina's is over there doing promos. What are you doing over there?
Eating some cornbread from the deli bakery.
Yeah. Love that.
Hanging out.
Nice.
All right, we've gone through dinner. But we have to retreat to breakfast.
That's right.
Because sometimes the dinner that we've talked about all throughout the show might be your Christmas Eve dinner, or it could be your Christmas Day dinner, or it could be both, right? Because we did prime rib and we did duck.
Right.
We got you covered.
My Christmas Eve dinner this year is going to be porchetta with polenta. Looking forward to making that.
Mm. See, I love that idea. Again, cozy. And it's kind of a, it's still a production. It's not what we always think of, but like porchetta. Love it. Okay.
I'm going to Don and Joe's after the show and picking up my porchetta.
All right.
Breakfast.
I'm going to do my leftover duck, because remember we're doing duck?
So you had your duck for Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had the duck for Christmas Eve, and I'm going to have leftover roasted ducks. I'm going to take that meat, chop it down, or cut it down into smaller pieces. And I'm caramelized some onions. Caramelized onion. Add the duck at the last minute just to warm it up. And then do a nice little scramble or omelet right into that with a bunch of eggs, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit of grated cheese at the last minute on top of that scrambled egg or omelet. Roll the whole thing up. Cut it like an omelet. And then cut it into pieces and then serve that. And I want to do potato pancakes because I love grated potato pancake.
Yeah.
I just think breakfast to me is all about the potato and the egg.
Okay.
I can live without bacon for breakfast, but I can definitely, those nice juicy potato, again, I made caramelized onion, so I'm going to take some on the side and use that into my potatoes, into my potato pancake, grated the potato, put it in the pan, leave it alone, don't touch it, seasoned with salt and pepper and that's it, and then once it's really crisp, flip it over and do it the other the same way.
All right, Sarah, you said that we had a question. Chef just made an omelet or a scramble. Should he be what's the question?
Yeah, so K. Robin Egger asked us, should you be adding milk to scrambled eggs? They've heard conflicting reports.
No, put milk in your coffee or on the side, but don't put it in the omelet.
So it doesn't actually make eggs fluffier when you add milk or water to it?
It does. It helps.
It does?
It helps make your omelet a bit lighter. But no, first of all, no. N-O. No need for that. Use your milk somewhere else.
Here's the thing. There is a lot of misconception about how to properly cook eggs. And many people were taught at some point or another to add a milk product. Some people have even been taught to put water in eggs.
It's just to expand the size of the two eggs into a three egg.
That's also true. What I would say is eggs are always this really funny topic because people have such strong opinions about how they like their eggs. If they like them fluffy, if they like them creamy, if they want them cooked and, you know, a little bit more well done.
Maybe
browned. Some people like a crispy fried egg. Some people don't like a crispy fried egg.
I can settle
egg,
this.
You know.
Oh, Tom. I can settle this.
Tom, you can't settle. You can't
with my Christmas breakfast. If you want to put milk or cream in your eggs, you simply make a strata, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have all the bread, and you've got the sausage and the kale and the mushrooms, the cheese, all these ingredients, and then you take your eggs and you make a custard out of it, either with whole milk or with cream. Mm-hmm. I like it with cream, a little richer. Whole milk would work. And then you pour it over top of all these ingredients, and the milky eggs soak into the bread.
Yeah.
And the eggs work as a leavener when you bake this whole thing. It lightens the whole thing up, the custard does. And it's a delicious way to add milk or cream to your eggs.
But I totally
agree with Chef on when you're making scrambled eggs or an omelet, Don't put in milk or cream.
Make a quiche if you want to use milk with your eggs.
Or just, you know, replace that milk with nice big pats of butter. You won't.
Yeah. Or cheese.
Or cheese.
Yeah.
Something nice and rich and creamy. I love the idea for the holidays. I'm even thinking of my own aspirations for the Christmas breakfast, but baking something, you know.
Right.
There's something, again, that cozy feeling of something in the oven. Maybe it is a strata, and it's nice and savory, but hey, why not tackle some homemade bagels or a homemade cinnamon bun? Mm.
Well, and that is also something that, depending on the recipe, that you could maybe make the night before and then just pull out, let proof. When I was growing up, we had a cinnamon pull-apart. My grandmother was part German, and they were called Schnecken.
Mm-hmm.
We put a version of it in the Dahlia Bakery book. It's not hers, as my mother has pointed out to me many times. Because hers, in my mind, were a little dry, and the sugar caramel was a little granular. So we just did what I thought was a better cinnamon roll, and I have been chastised by my family for messing with the recipe since the book came out. So, tough. This is better. It's okay.
I
have a lot more experience in the kitchen than my grandmother ever did.
Oh, boy. Hope grandma is not
She's coming back to slap you.
She is no longer with
from
us.
From the great beyond.
Grandma Douglas was, my favorite was going to her house and smelling the schnecken, and she would always serve it with bacon and cantaloupe. And those smells to this day, to me, represent those kind of special breakfasts.
But that's amazing, because when you say that, when you say those buns and bacon and cantaloupe, the whole audience, and I think even for myself, has a visceral reaction, because we know what those sweet, kind of smoky scents are, mm-hmm. and that's really what the holidays is about, is mm-hmm. creating those traditions and things you can get excited.
And that literal aromatherapy emotion, right?
Mm-hmm,
that literal. I mean, I loved Hirschnecken growing up. I just grew out of it from a particular recipe. You don't need to send me letters. I love my grandmother. I get letters every week, and it's
already
it's okay.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that's one of the special parts of that breakfast or that dinner, is to remember the family traditions that mm-hmm. are going on there.
The smell that fills the house.
Yeah, so even when chef has made his beautiful Charlotte, or I've made my apple tart or pear tart, mm-hmm. you're still going to see around the buffet where those desserts are, the sugar cookies with icing, the spritz cookies, all those kind of family traditions.
The beignets, the stuff like that. Yeah, of course.
The beignets?
Yeah.
We never had beignets.
No?
You had beignets?
Yeah.
That's not right. That's not fair.
It's too classy.
Yeah, I know.
Well, man, your
mom literally got the oil out and fried beignet for you?
Yeah, there is nothing classier but beignet. It's very simple.
I know it is, but who gets out a pan of oil in the morning and makes beignets?
I was going to say, it's more the Toll House cookie.
I do it at the restaurant.
States.
I don't do it at home.
Well, you do. You fry something. It doesn't take much to fry beignets.
I'm just saying, your mother's up for sainthood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but she does.
She's up for chef sainthood.
Yeah, and so is my grandma, because she did the beignets too.
The other question we had about breakfast is it okay to use seafood in breakfast? Because you always talk about bacon or sausage or ham or all that kind of stuff. But is it okay to serve crab cake for breakfast?
Yeah.
What would you not be?
Sure.
Trout? We never talk about it.
Smoked trout, little salmon,
or lox.
Absolutely.
Mm. I'm just saying, it never comes up.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true.
Any feelings on, speaking of eggs and seafood, all in one delicious segment, the Hangtown Fry. Is this something that we get excited about?
What is that?
The Hangtown Fry. What does it all involve?
It's an omelet with fresh oysters in the center.
Ah, no, thank you. Oysters on the half shell, though, on the side was a little.
No, you don't put oysters on the half shell in the omelet.
No, I understand. Thanks, Tom, for clarifying. I had the hardest time to eat that omelet.
Tom's got shivers just thinking.
Oysters
about
on the half shell with a glass of champagne, first thing in the morning, is after a cup of coffee, is actually not a bad idea.
That sounds terrible to me.
Yeah.
But a pan-fried oyster, I guess that's where I was going, you're going to have this big dinner, right? This big roast beef dinner and blah, blah, blah. Isn't it a good time in the morning to maybe have a little pan-fried trout with your eggs?
Yeah.
Or
absolutely.
A little crab cake would be fun, although we're having
delicious
crab cocktail tonight, but... what do you think?
Well, growing up in a Japanese household, it's a really natural thing for me to think about fish in the morning mm-hmm. with just a little light. Even miso soup is really always nice and warming, a cup of green tea and a nice broiled piece of fish. I know it's not particularly traditional here, but, you know, in many other countries, that is a delicious, light, sustaining breakfast, especially if you know you're going to have a much heavier day ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. You could do gravlax with those potato pancakes. I mean, that's delicious breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's many ways to skin an egg.
Or maybe you just want a different kind of egg, and you want some caviar.
And maybe you want a quail egg or a couple of quail eggs. You know, this is the time of the year where you can start trying those things. I don't know. You'd have to have
a 24 quail egg omelet to make.
Okay, so you don't have to be a cochon. You can also be dainty.
Exactly.
God.
I like how he calls you a cochon. We're going very French.
All right, it's time for Food for Thought. Tasty trivia. Going to wrap up our holiday show with some holiday trivia, would be my guess, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, the chef in the chapeau. A worthy adversary is across the way. KDO, it's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, our last segment. Thank you for listening today. You can always pick us up again on your podcast or Stitcher, iTunes, all those places. We're on typically three times a weekend.
That's right. You can catch us as you're driving around.
Yes, on Cairo.
Yeah.
And that would be
4 o'clock on Saturdays, 10 o'clock on Sundays, and sometimes at 5 o'clock on Sundays.
So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Depending on the Seahawks schedule. It's time for Food for Thought. Tina, what do you have for us?
Well, this is how the game's played, you guys. You will each get 5 questions. This quiz is Christmas-themed. You know, 'tis the season. But here's how it works. You each get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least is obviously the loser. And that loser has to give something away, a prized possession, something that you cherish.
Of our own?
Of Tom's.
Okay. Oh, I like that. That's always fun.
Like something you cherish from Tom.
From Tom. Today you're playing for 3 of our audience members that are right here. Dan, Nicholas, and Kelly will receive a prize today.
Yeah.
All right, Miss Katie.
Yes.
Should you lose the quiz on this rare occasion, what will you give to Dan, Nicholas, or Katie?
Well, how about some Molly Moon's ice cream, a little gift card to Molly Moon's, and some hot fudge, and maybe even some sprinkles, too.
Chef Terry.
You know, I was thinking of giving something in my restaurants, but I'm also thinking maybe giving something to Food Lifeline in their name, maybe a $100 gift certificate for each one of them to Food Lifeline, which would be a totaling of 400 meals. Do you feel generous about that?
That's very sweet.
I think that'd be very cool.
That's lovely. Nice. Donation to Food Lifeline. Tom?
I am going to give something for Carmageddon.
Oh,
you know, we're all concerned down here that none of you listeners are going to come to Seattle from the 11th of January to the 11th of February. So this is going to force you to come during Carmageddon.
So, Carmageddon, I love the name.
I'm going to give you lunch for 6 people at the Dahlia Lounge during from that time frame, from the 11th of January to the 11th of February. You can use it any time in that month. Awesome. And I'll remind all of you listeners out there that we would love for you to come see us downtown, because I know the media is going to scare you away, but we're still going to be here. We'd love to see you during Carmageddon.
Sometimes the exciting thing about when the news media says that it's going to be terrible is that all of a sudden, if you're brave enough, it's actually not that bad for you, because actually, everyone has been scared off.
Exactly.
It's probably going to be the best time to come downtown.
Right. I was watching, I think it was King TV the other night, and they had theme music for Carmageddon. That's when you know things are bad.
When they've gotten production involved.
First it was the tornado in Port Orchard, and now Carmageddon!
Dun, dun, dun. All right, y'all, who would like to go first?
I'll start.
All right, Chef Terry, your first question. Candy canes were invented in 1670. What were they invented for? A, to add a fresh smell to Christmas dinner. Were they invented to keep kids quiet? Or were they invented to brighten up an otherwise gloomy time of year?
Nobody knows, but I'm going to go...
It's A, B, or C, Chef.
I'm going to go with A, to make the room smell good.
It's actually to keep kids quiet.
Mm-hmm. That was the other one.
Bribery.
Bribery.
That's been a long time going.
Question number 2, Chef. True or false? Sugar plums aren't actually plums. Is that true or false?
That is true.
Correct. All right, Chef. Question number 3. What was the bird served at Christmas during medieval times? Was it duck, chicken, or peacock?
I'm going to go with a peacock.
It was. It was a peacock. A very pretty dinner they had.
They use it only for the feathers.
Question number 4, Chef. How many calories in the typical Christmas dinner? Is it 7,000, 8,000, or 10,000 calories? On average, y'all.
I'm going to go 8.
7,000.
No, I mean, you're coming
arbitrary
to my house. No, I'm giving you an extra 1,000 calories.
I'm going to give you that one. All right, your last question. You have 2 correct and 2 incorrect. Name the main ingredient in figgy pudding.
Figs.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's figs.
Do you Tom's know shaking his head no.
It's a really weird
question.
Well,
what's the main ingredient? Is it
pudding?
The most ingredient or the main ingredient?
I think figs works.
Yeah, I mean...
What else is in it for a bonus?
Eggs, sugar, flour. I mean, those would be also the main
So
ingredient.
Terry's winning with 10 points.
Wow, 10 points.
Wow.
Fantastic.
10 Terry.
Katie
really
O's up next.
Killing it.
Katie
okay.
O, you're up next. Katie, in the Christmas song, what was roasting on an open fire?
Chestnuts. Creme de marron for the chefs.
Nice job. Question number two. What fruit, when put into the container, will keep a stored Christmas cake moist? Is it apple, orange, or pear?
How about an apple?
How about a pair of apples?
There you go.
That would be
extra moist.
The answer is apple. Good job. All right, question number three. Katie, that's two for two. Nice job. What should be eaten on each day of the 12 days of Christmas to ensure good luck for the year ahead? You have some choices.
Yes, it's
very
please.
Pagan.
Figs, candy cane, a mince pie, or walnuts?
This feels like a very old tradition, so I'm going to say the walnut.
The answer is the mince pie.
The mince pie. That's a
what?
Lot of mince pie.
I know, right?
Ooh, I would have not gotten that one either.
Constantly baking.
If you're not eating English Christmas pudding.
Which is generally a plum pudding.
What are you eating? Pumpkin pie, persimmon pudding, lemon meringue pie, or ice cream?
Tom eats a persimmon pudding.
Yep. Tom's correct. Tom is eating the correct pudding.
Wow, really? Is that
I actually would have guessed pumpkin pie.
Katie, your last question. You're two for two. You need to get this one right to tie with Chef Thierry. What bird was skinned before roasting, then put back together again, complete with feathers, to take pride of place at a Tudor Christmas banquet? Goose, turkey, peacock, or quail?
Are we talking peacock again?
Yep.
Wow. That peacock was a big...
Yeah, it was a big thing.
Big thing back in the day.
Katie, you have tied with Terry, 3-for-3. Tom, it's your turn.
I thought Terry had 10 points.
Terry's always a winner in my eyes.
Okay.
All right, Tom. Vanilla is used in all kinds of lovely Christmas dishes. Mm-hmm. What type of flower does the vanilla pod come from?
Orchid.
Yes.
Correct.
Wow.
Question number two. Despite attempts to revive its popularity as a retro food, corned beef has fallen out of favor. What does corned mean?
It means it's preserved. Salted?
Yep, salted.
Yeah, same thing.
I just wanted to be specific.
Tom loves corned beef.
I do love corned beef. And it hasn't fallen out of flavor.
Not for you. Huh? Cute. Tom, which is the odd one out? Mint, rosemary, tarragon?
Rosemary.
The answer's tarragon.
What?
It's just a member of a different family. Tom, traditionally, minced meat should only be stirred in one direction. Which direction is it?
Counterclockwise.
Nope.
Okay.
Not the one. Not the one.
That is counterintuitive, I guess.
It's clockwise for good luck. Tom, in the UK, what is a baron of beef?
It is a finely roasted leg of steer. That is thinly sliced off the bone, put onto nice little fluffy rolls with fresh horseradish cream.
It most certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Y'all, this is new. You've tied. A three-way tie.
So we're going to all three of our guests.
Everybody wins.
Who is it again?
Look under your chair. Just kidding.
Dan, Nicholas, and Kelly.
Dan, Nicholas, and Kelly. Yeah. Congratulations. If you want to be part of our show and super cool like Dan, Nicholas, and Kelly, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And if you'd like to be part of the studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. Comes with a delicious, yes, delicious breakfast sandwich from the Dahlia Bakery. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can go to Bartell's and buy it on a three-pack special of our mustard. Or go to Stitcher or iTunes or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.